Good morning, Broadway. I'm Wendell. I've been here with you for several months in a row now, so I guess you know who I am by now. I'm our Pathway pastor. We have a ministry of hope and healing. We meet on Sunday night. You're always welcome. It's open for everybody. Love to see you. It's good to be with you here this morning, and we're starting a new series on our words, what we do with our words. And the passage that you've heard read is one of those little sandwiched passage out of Proverbs where the writer says something and then he puts something in the middle and then he says the same thing again, and he talks about what a kind word does versus what an angry word does, and then he says, and God knows the heart, and then he basically says the same thing again. And Pastor Adam said, isn't it interesting that it's like an Oreo cookie, that you have the little pithy statement and the pithy statement, and then God is the cream in the middle. I thought, when he told me that, I thought, I'm going to include that in my sermon, but I'm going to give him credit for it. So God is the cream in an Oreo cookie. That is the theme of the sermon. Not really, but you won't forget that. I guarantee you won't. So I want to tell you a story. It was so long ago that I think I was 3 or 4 years old, and some of us can't remember even when we were 6 or 7, but for some reason I can remember all the way back to about 2. Weird. I just can. I don't remember everything, but I have certain little details. So we were in North Chilai, New York. That's just west, no, east. That's just east of Niagara Falls. And we were at my mother's parents' house, my grandma and grandpa's house, there in North Chilai. And for some reason, they decided that we were going to visit my great-grandfather, my mother's grandfather, who lived in Niagara Falls. So it was me and my older sister and maybe one of my other sisters. I can't remember if she was born then or yet. I doubt she was because I was so young. So it was just two of us, me and my big sister, in the back seat of one of those big old cars. I don't know what they were, but remember when the steering wheels were like this big and the back seat was just a bench, a cold bench, no seat belts in sight, no car seats in sight. We just bounced around wherever we wanted to, had all the room to roam, and we didn't have to fight over space because we had, you know, a backyard to ourselves. So anyway, we're traveling to Niagara Falls to see my great-grandfather. And it was exciting because we were going to see Niagara Falls, but going to go see a relative I'd never met before. By the way, I only met him once. This was the only time. We're going to go meet him. And we got close to Niagara Falls, and I don't know if you've ever been there, but there's a steam that rolls up, and so it has this ambient feel to it, you know, and it's like, whoa. So I was starting to get a little edgy as a little boy, you know. We're getting close to Niagara Falls. I didn't know what to expect or anything. And all of a sudden, his head comes around and turns around in the back seat. It was my mother. So rare. She doesn't, not her character to do this. But she turns around with her arm up on the seat, and she gives us this stern look. And she said, now I want to tell you that you're going to go see your great-grandfather. You are not to touch anything. You are not to say anything. You sit where we tell you to sit, and you sit there until we go. Because he is a very touchy person. He's kind of grumpy. She didn't say a whole lot there, but she let us know. You go into a place where you are seen but not heard, and you don't move. Well, the mood of Niagara Falls, the mystique, disappeared. I mean, it was like, oh, okay. This was out of character for our mother, so it was like, oh, okay. And I can remember the details of this. We got out of this big car, and there was a little white frame house, and we walked up on the porch, and the door opened, and little short me, it opened. I was eyeball to eyeball with this giant Doberman looking me right in the eye, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I am fixing to be somebody's dinner. So somebody from inside called the Doberman. His name was Dobie. Oh, what a creative name. Called Dobie back away from the door, and we were ushered in and told where to sit. And so we sat. And when I sat down and I looked across the room, I could still see it. He was in the opposite corner diagonally from me. There sits this man I'd never seen before and have never seen since. There sits this man in his chair. His face was a harsh beet red. Just beet red. He wasn't an alcoholic, by the way. He was just, that's the way he came. And his eyes, like, bore holes in you when they looked at you. And I've never been, maybe I have, but very rarely have I been in the presence of such a fierce human being. And I thought, oh my gracious. And then he started to talk. Not much, wasn't wordy, but what he said, it was like his words cut right through you. And I remember sitting there, a Doberman over here, a great-grandfather over here, and me sitting on this couch thinking, I can't wait till we leave. Scared to death the whole time. The whole atmosphere was frightening. Well, I survived, obviously. We laughed and drove home. And at I had to be maybe 3 or 4 years old. That has never left me. That experience is still as real today as it was back then. I'm 66. Just had a birthday. Happy birthday to me. All these years, that is still vivid in my mind. And when I saw this, the passage we were going to talk about, and thought about maybe some of the things we need to say, this dawned on me. I thought, this man, who was my great-grandfather, only met once in my life, scared me to death. This man who was my grandfather, I have serious doubts that there was one morning in his life when he woke up and said, you know, my goal in life is to scare small children. That's not the way that happened. What happened was, if I know human nature the way I think I do, what happened was that he had an infinite number of little crossroads in his life every day where he had to choose me or we, get or give, be kind or be mean, be gracious or be judgmental. He made those choices one choice at a time. How many in a day, I don't know. But over a lifetime, and he was old when I met him, over a lifetime, he had made a myriad of choices that brought him to that moment where he sat there with his great-grandchildren and scared them to death simply by his presence, his look, and his tone of voice, and just the atmosphere in his home. So the passage that we looked at today is basically talking about words. That our words are either a blessing to people or they're a curse to people. We're either helping them have a good, joyous, healthy day, or we're hurting them, frightening them, worrying them, angering them, whatever. You know, we blessing or curse, we have that choice to make. But what's interesting is that the words that we say in our casual relationships, maybe when we're younger, we carefully, now how am I, well, we're not so careful when we're young, but we kind of have a choice about what we're going to say. But the point I'm trying to make is not that we're careful when we're young, because we're not. The point I'm trying to make is that once we make a choice a number of times, it no longer becomes a choice. It just becomes a way of life. So if we have the option between, I'm going to make this conversation about them, or I'm going to make it about me, just use that as an example. Once we make the choice to say, I'm going to make it about me, enough times, it's no longer a choice. It's what we do. It becomes kind of our personality, our character, whatever. And so, what the writer of the Proverbs is saying is that our words make a difference in the other person, but our words also make a difference in us. Our choice of words, our goal, the motives behind those words, the choices we make at that level affect them, but they also form our character and our personality over time. So that what we used to kind of choose to do becomes who we are, and it becomes our normal. This is just who I am. This is just the way I live life. We don't think about it anymore. And so if somebody was to say, do you realize that you were rude to so-and-so, you'd think, no, I wasn't. I wasn't rude at all. Unless they're a close friend and they pressed it, and then you would like, well, really? But for the most part, do you get where we're going here? That we make a lot of little choices to become who we are, and then we don't really think about who we are. That's where we are right now in the sermon. So that's why we got lots more to say here, but it sounds like we're reaching a conclusion, but we're just joking. We're not done yet. That's why we need each other. That's why we need the Holy Spirit to live with us and in us. That's why we need places like Pathway and Broadway and small groups to where we can get close to people and people are able to speak into our lives and help us see past our own. Because I'm going to always self-justify. Whatever choice I make, that was the right choice to make. It's my choice. I made the right choice. When we let other people in, when we let the Holy Spirit speak to us, then we begin to realize, oh, I might need to rethink that. Okay, so we're changing gears, but hang with me. This is going somewhere. So Robbie, that's my wife. Robbie and I have been married over 30-some years. And I say 30-some because if I tried to get the number right, I'd get it wrong and then I'd get in trouble. I really wouldn't. Anyway, we've been married over 30-some years. Okay, so when we first got married, I'm trying to find the most extreme difference between the two of us. And so this is the one that I've come up with. I was the aggressive, assertive, proactive one. Let's just, you know, like the cable guy, Larry the Cable, let's just get her done. Let's get her done. If we mess up, we'll clean up later. Let's just get her done. And she's over here like, I don't know, we probably ought to think about this. You know, we probably ought to look through all our options. We need to be really careful, you know, and she went to that extreme. So early on, this was probably the biggest point of contention between us in our marriage. That was years, decades ago. We're old people. So over all these years, we were talking about it just two or three days ago. Over all these years, we look in the mirror mutually and realize that because of all these discussions / arguments / experiences, just all this life that we've done together, her being the careful one, me being the careless one, if you want to use these terms, we look in the mirror mutually now, today, and we realize I'm more careful and she's more decisive. So our words have affected not just us, but have affected each other over time. And some of them have been in the heat of an argument. Some of them have been in simple conversation. Some of them have been when we were shopping. That's usually when it was, when we were shopping. But through, as we've experienced, raising kids, wow, budgeting money, all these things that happen between a married couple over time, our words rub off and affect the other person, but they also affect us as well. So you look at the people you go to church with. You look at the people that you work with every day, 8 hours a day. You look at your children. You look at your parents. You look at your spouse. You look at the people who are the meat and potatoes of your life. If you draw a pie chart, you spend a big chunk of the pie with them. And they're the ones you have the meaningful conversations with. They're the ones you have to make the big decisions with and do life together with. So over time, we realize the power that our words have with these people and the power their words have with us. Words have power. If we don't get anything else out of this series, they say sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never. No, that is so untrue. Words are what make the world go round, and words have tremendous power. And over time, they have a cumulative power that is, well, go back to Niagara Falls. They have that kind of power that'll wear down rock over time. So part of what we're saying right now is that what we say matters. Just let that soak in. What we say matters. And most of us in this moment right now, as I'm speaking, you're watching, listening, whatever, most of us would agree that really does matter with children, spouses, workmates, colleagues, people, you know, that we're with all the time. It really matters. But I don't know why this hit me as I was thinking about this, but it really, really screams volumes. It's profound. What about all those 10-second encounters we have in life? Now, if we're going to do a pie chart, those make up a huge chunk of the pie. In line at the movie theater, checking out at the Quick Sack, buying gas at the big box store, the guy who roofed your house, all these 10-second encounters that may, you know, be 30 seconds, 5 minutes, whatever, but you get the picture. They're the little casual encounters that we have. The person who serves you at your table at the sit-down restaurant, all these little encounters, do our words matter then? Think about somebody who says something ugly to you while you're waiting in line, or while you're, you know, think at a restaurant, you hear somebody speak something ugly and mean to somebody. Even if it's not aimed at you, don't those words have some sort of punch to them? Like, oh, you know, they didn't say that to me, but I caught the backlash of it. That hurt. Think about all those 10-second encounters that we have in life, that we have a chance, as this Proverbs says, we have a chance to either speak a curse in that 10 seconds or speak a blessing. Now here's where it really comes down. This is the one that really hit me, that to me speaks volumes to us today. We can either say, it's only 10 seconds, what does it matter? That's one option. It's only 10 seconds. I'll never see this person again in my life. They don't know my name. They don't know where I live. I don't know their name. I don't know where they live. We're just ships, you know, passing in the night. And so it doesn't matter what I say to them. As long as I get what I want, as long as I get my way, as long as I make my point, I'll say whatever I want to and say it. It's only 10 seconds. It's not going to make or break their life, you know. That's one approach. The other approach would be to say, you know what? I only have 10 seconds. How can I make the best of this? How can I utilize this 10 seconds that I have with this individual, this human made in the image of God, to at least for this 10 seconds, let them know that they are seen and they are heard and I value them and I respect them. What can I say in this 10 seconds to send that message to them? Now that's powerful in itself. But to me, the real power of all this is, what does this say about me? What does it say about my character if I say, it's only 10 seconds, it doesn't matter? Or, I've only got 10 seconds. How can I make the best of it? This is what determines my character, who I am. This is the legacy that I leave behind. And I've gotten to thinking about the legacy that my great-grandfather left behind with me. He had, at best, a half an hour with his great-grandson. He had other great-grandsons, but with this great-grandson, he had a half an hour, and he left an indelible mark on a three-year-old that I can still remember now. That's his legacy to me. If you say, tell me about your great-grandfather so-and-so, well, his legacy is that. I look at my other grandfather, not great-grandfather, but my grandfather, who lived in the Catskills up in New York. I mean, right there tells you something. Lived in Windham, New York in the Catskills. Lived in a two-story Victorian home that was probably 150 years old back then. Every time I saw him, and it wasn't that often, but every time I saw him, he acted like he'd been waiting for weeks to see me. He had an undershot jaw like this, so he always kind of talked a little bit different. But But he had a smile that went from ear to ear. He was 6 foot 12. Not really. He was a giant to me. And every time he saw me, every time we did something together, he was inclusive. He was mentoring. He was teaching. He was patient. Everything he did, I don't need to tell you this story, but I'm going to anyway. In this two-story Victorian home, I slept upstairs when I went to visit. It was cold. And in the morning, I would get bundled up and walk down the steps. And he would be in the kitchen on a wood stove with a cast iron frying pan, making me pancakes in the shape of a gingerbread man. And then he'd get blueberries that he had picked, and he'd put buttons and eyes and nose on that thing and come and bring it to me like I've worked, all put in all this effort just for you so you'd have a happy breakfast. That left a legacy. I will never forget that about my grandfather. So when I have an image of these two men, they're completely different. Granted, this grandfather had more time with me, but even if I had 10 minutes with him, I have a feeling he would have left that same thing. So I've got grandkids. They call me Pa. And I think about, what are they going to think about me when I'm gone? I'm old, so I've lived more life than I've got left to live. I'm not morbid. I don't have a death wish, but I realize I'm closer to the grave than I've ever been. So what? We all are. Yeah, we all are. So I think about, what are people going to say about me when I die? I don't mean up front. They get up front, they'll make a saint out of anybody. The people speak up front. But what will they whisper about me in the back, And life is not trying to develop a good reputation. But it matters to me. I don't know if it does to you, but it matters to me to think that I will leave a footprint that is positive, that is helpful, that has blessed other people, that has built and mentored and encouraged and impacted and empowered other people. Will my words do that? When you think about it in a big picture like that, a lot of us don't think about it that way. You think about it in a big picture. And this happens in 10-second increments so often. Not in the big relationships. Those count hugely. But what happens every day, are these little 10-second encounters where we leave our footprint on thousands, if not millions, of hearts between the cradle and the grave as we walk through this life. I can't tie this one up with a pretty bow. I'd love to, but I can't. It's just kind of a challenge. And this last thing I'm going to say before we close, I'm going to blame totally on Jeremy Vincent. I was just in his office, and we were talking about this message. And so he threw me this curveball, and I thought, okay, I'm going to close my message with this, and I'm going to blame it on you. So we've talked about the 10-second encounters, and we've talked about the family members and the people we work with. What about the people in the middle? What about the people in the middle who you meet with maybe for an hour's meeting every other week? What about the family members who you know you're going to have to be with every Thanksgiving and Christmas? You don't live with them, and you don't just kind of casually bump into them, but you they're part of your life, but they're somewhere in the in-between part. And they're really hard to live with. They're like the fly in the ointment. They're like the unpleasant person in the room. How do we negotiate our words to them? How do we negotiate cursings and blessings and everything? And if I'm going to blame Jeremy for the close of this sermon, I'm also going to give him credit for the answer he gave me, because I thought it was profound. The one thing I have in common with everybody, the 10-second encounters, the people I do life with, and then the people in the middle, the one thing I've got in common with all of them is that God's Spirit lives within all of us. God is doing something in everybody on the planet. And so the one thing I have in common with the problem people in my life who I find it difficult to know how to speak a blessing, the natural thing would be to probably say something negative. To me, what Jeremy said was so profound is the one thing I do know that links us together is the same Spirit of God who lives in me lives in them. And so I look to the Holy Spirit and say, I don't know what to say. What would you say? And then follow his lead. Literally, God, what do you want? What do you say here? Be aware, listen to his leading. It may be something pleasant, it may be something unpleasant, but it'll be motivated by love and it'll turn out to be helpful. Not a nice tidy bow, but it's where we live life, folks. Our conversations, what we say, what we choose not to say, that's where we live life. And that's what forms our legacy. The little things become our legacy. Let's talk to Jesus. Jesus, you talk to us, you listen to us. You were a friend like no other. And you invited us, you said, you know, follow me, come and see. And you included us in your conversations, the pleasant ones and the not so pleasant ones. And so when you physically left us, the promise you gave us to be with us through your Spirit, we're gonna cash that one in and say we're gonna bank on that being true, that you're a man of your word, that your Spirit lives in us and it lives in the person across from us. And so we have that in common. And we can seek you to unify us. And we can seek you to give us words of blessing and helpful and mentoring. Words that we can share with each other. So we do life with you and we speak words with you. And we thank you for that. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks for joining me today. We'll be with you in 3 more weeks.